And now, I would like to introduce our main speaker for this evening, Carol S. from Spring Valley.
There are a lot of people here tonight, even if a lot of them went over to Yucca Valley. My name's Carol, and I'm an alcoholic. I always like to just take a moment to feel being up here in front of you and be with you before I actually talk, because I am. I want to thank, actually, Connie and Terry cooked this up and asked me if I would speak, not if I wanted to, and they turned my name in, and then here I am. Well, I guess I have to give a little background of what it was like for me growing up. I didn't start drinking until I was 20, and I managed through life for 12 whole years without drinking, and then life kind of changed. I was going to school and in high school in the 50s, so you remember the Happy Days thing on TV? That was me and my friends. None of my friends smoked, drank, did anything. The only time I ever heard about pot was the Reefer Madness. I'm like, and they even showed you how to do it, you know. And, I was raised in a military family. We moved a lot. And so I was always the new girl, and I was kind of shy. So I worked up this little coping mechanism where I would just look good, and I would be nice, and I would just kind of hang back and see what everybody was doing and then step in line with everybody else. And then I would make friends, and then we'd move again. And I think if you add them all up, the little trips where my dad followed dad all over the country and dry docked somewhere for 2 weeks and we were pulled out of school, then I moved 30 times before I left home, which is a lot. And after I got put back in the third grade, I did well in school, and in spite of that. There's a couple little glitches, you know, where I'm not quite sure how to make a letter this way, or, you know, something silly like that. But for the most part, I was okay. I went to school. I did my little coping mechanism. I also, you know, I looked at myself and looked at myself in the mirror, and if I closed my teeth, I look kind of all squashed down. And this is really important to me, so I would put my tongue behind my teeth so they wouldn't be closed all the way. So then I would just like, I'd look good. So I went to a lot of trouble to not stick out, you know, even though I was a new girl. I was raised in a very strict home. My father ruled the roost, like happens in many military families, and my mother was afraid of him like we were. He was verbally abusive, but on the other hand, we loved him because he was really a good father, other than that, and other than being gone a lot. So I didn't get to date, and if I went to the dance, I had to be chaperoned to and back, and when I finally did have one date, I was also chaperoned to and back. And it was three of us. I'm the oldest of three daughters, and we had one boy cousin, and that was, besides my grandfather, who was a drunk that lived in one bedroom, and my sisters and I that were in the other bedroom, and, of course, Mom and Dad and theirs, I wasn't around boys very much, you know, except for me, you know, at school. And so I didn't really know a lot about boys, and that kind of followed me for a long time. I fell in love with my high school sweetheart, got pregnant when I was 17, we got married, he was 19, and my folks moved to Washington, D.C. shortly after. And so for the next 3 years, I guess, I had a daughter. She was about 10 months old, and this was my first experience of actually drinking. My husband was the youngest of four brothers and a sister, and we went over to his next older brother's house, and They were about 4 years older than this, he and his wife. And my sister-in-law was from Kentucky. And they had gone back to visit family back there, and they brought back some moonshine. And most of my husband's brothers and sister all drank. And their father died from drinking because on a foggy night, he drove off the Benita Bridge and got killed. So we got married, and I was very immature. He was more mature than I was, and he was a little like my father. You know, it was his way, and that was all the way it was. But we were in love, and I had this one little daughter, and I just have to stop for a second. I was going to say in the beginning of this that I told a lot of people about me being here tonight, speaking tonight. And I called my sister in Midland, Texas, and my sister in Point Loma. And, of course, I knew they wouldn't be here, but I told them about the website. So, Dottie and Kathy, if you're listening, I love you. anyway, times before when I had spoken, I didn't tell anybody because I thought it was kind of egotistical. And then everybody complained because they said if they'd known, they would have come. So I told everybody I talked to. So that was kind of fun. And so back to the sister and brother-in-law's house. they gave me some moonshine and some kind of mix. Excuse me. And, I had my 10-month-old baby there, and we were just hanging out, four of us, and I got pretty drunk. And I didn't say bad words. I had heard bad words, but I didn't say bad words before that day. And I was truly married, and, I had no other thoughts besides that. But that afternoon kind of is depicted. It's a microcosm of my drinking throughout my drinking career. I got drunk. I said things that I was ashamed of the next day and embarrassed. I think I came onto my brother-in-law. My daughter needed her diaper changed. Now, back in the days when you had tin and material diapers, and I pricked her in the side. She started crying. My husband got mad at me, and then we went home. And the next morning, I was very hungover. I was hungover every time I drank, And then I had a little part-time job down at Penny's, and I had to go to work hungover that day. And I didn't go like I hear a lot of people say, oh, it was so much fun, when can we do this again? I just was horrified. And I didn't particularly care for the taste of it. I just was doing something that the grown-ups were doing. And so I didn't plan on drinking. I don't know that I ever planned on drinking again. But there was just something about being in this family that drank. And I was desperately wanted to be grown up. I don't think I felt grown up until I was about 25. And so we would go to parties or, with the family or whatnot, and sometimes I would have a drink. This disease is progressive. And that was what, I had a very slow progression in the beginning. And after a while, my husband and I were drinking a cocktail when he'd come home from work instead of the coffee that we used to drink. And it just slowly, bit by bit, became more of what we did. We had friends that we went camping with. We went water skiing down on the bay, and everybody drank. And it just became kind of a way of life. And I had ended up having, my daughter was the first of my children, and I have two sons. We had two sons. I always say I. I think it took someone else to help me with that. Anyway, somewhere along the line, I began to really start growing up. And the man that I married when I was 17 began to disappoint me. And I don't know if I had never been drinking whether I would have divorced him. Probably I would have eventually. But drinking, it just brought on all kinds of behaviors, and I became very unhappy with him, and I had never worked, and I didn't know what I was going to do. I think I used to kind of hope, I hate to say this on the website, but I didn't tell them, so maybe he's not listening. I used to daydream about him maybe dying. I wasn't planning on doing it, but I just, you know, maybe a car accident or something. And as you can see, I was pretty immature. Anyway, eventually I decided that I needed to be married to somebody else, but I thought I would find somebody before I left. And I was raised in a home where with really high morals, and yet, you know, I got pregnant, got married when I was young, and then I started cheating on my husband. When we've been married about, I think about 7 or 8 years, maybe 10. And I had this whole other life. I had a girlfriend that would go with me, and she was kind of at the end of one of her marriages. And so we would make up these bizarre excuses to go out. You know, they had midnight sales down at some of the stores. There was a Tupperware party. You had to prepare for PTA. On. And I became very good at lying. I became so good at lying that I can remember at one point somebody asked me a question, and I lied just because it was easier than thinking about it. And that got my attention, because that was just kind of dumb. Usually I always had a reason for it. But it just kind of became a way of life. And eventually, to make the story a little shorter, I left him. I didn't have anybody, but I just couldn't take it anymore. He was unhappy. He didn't know what to do. And I was unhappy, and so I left. And I went to my mom and dad's house. He always said, if you're unhappy, leave. I'll take the kids, the house, everything. If you're unhappy, just get out of here. I actually left him in 1970, was when they changed the laws that you didn't, it was in, what do you call it, irrevocable differences or something. And it used to be you had to prove fault. And that was kind of the ticket I was looking for, I guess. That made it a lot easier. And I wasn't prepared to be single. And I was really frightened. I didn't know what, you know, I was staying with my parents, which was kind of a bummer after you've already grown up and you go back and live with your parents. My father's still trying to tell me what to do. And then my kids were calling me and saying that dad was making them do housework at 9 o'clock at night. And so I went and got the kids, and they were with me. And long story short, we ended up getting divorced. I ended up giving him the house because he built it. And my parents helped me, as they did throughout my single life. And then my drinking, you know, like I didn't have to come home anytime. I could, you know, as long as the kids were okay, I'd go out. And I thought I could stay out all night if I don't have to come home at midnight. I actually did that about 3 or 4 times and decided that was pretty much of a drag, because I'd wake up feeling so horrible the next day. I always was a go to bed early and get up early person. So I kind of quit going, you know, staying out that late. But my drinking escalated, and I remarried really quickly, because I think I just didn't know how not to be married. And this guy was younger than me, and he hit me. And I didn't know what to do. So we were together for about 3.5 years. He moved to El Paso, Texas, and he became a policeman back there. And I didn't leave him, which is really, when I look back, I'm thinking, I had a lot to learn. Here I was being hit, knocked into the door, you know, never knew when it was going to happen. He broke my wrist 2 weeks after we were married, and he would beg me not to tell anybody, and I wouldn't. And thank God he left me. He moved in with some 19-year-old or something, I don't know. So I was really starting to get pretty depressed about life. I was drinking, and my kids were coming back to California to visit their father, you know, for most of the summer, and I just wasn't doing well. And I finally moved back to San Diego, and I knew that I had to get some way to take care of me and my kids and me after the kids were grown. And I wasn't willing to work at McDonald's or, you know, something like that. I had done well in school. So I decided I thought of the different things that women would do, you know, what kind of thing. And I narrowed it down, and I decided I want to be a nurse. So I went to nursing school, and during the time that I was in nursing school, my drinking pattern changed so that I could be successful in nursing school. And, you know, I never drank on the nights that I was going to school the next day or just going to the hospital, and I felt really inadequate at everything that I was doing, but I just pushed forward because I didn't know what else to do. I kept trying things that were going to fix my life. And I tried a lot of different things over the years. And they all helped me, but they didn't fix my alcoholism. And I had such a good justification and denial system going on that I really didn't think I was an alcoholic. I truly believed that if you had my life, you would drink too. And today that sounds funny, but I really believe that. And I got through nursing school. It used to be you go up to Long Beach, and it was 2 days of testing for your state boards. And there's this huge hall, and they're really very strict. You have to sign in with somebody, write your name down, and they'd give you your stuff that you were going to work on. You'd go into this huge room to an assigned table, and you would take the test. And when it was a break time, you had to go through all that again to go back out. And first day, I hadn't drank. I was good to go. I took the test, and I did well, I felt. And then it was time to go. And my girlfriend and I, she wasn't taking the state boards, but went with me. We went out drinking that night with a couple of guys that she knew. And I believe that I drank about 15 gin and tonics. And they had a very heated pool that night at their house. And I went into a blackout. The next thing I remember, this guy was like trying to peel me out of bed to go back down there, and he seemed very concerned. Not enough to not feed me alcohol and stuff. And I don't think I had ever felt that bad before or since. And I went down there, and I thought, oh, my God, what have I done? I am so hungover, I probably can't pass this. And then it's just going to be the end of the world. I won't be able to take care of myself and my kids. And I went in, and I took the first test okay, but then I kind of had to go get sick. And I had to get the lady to come over to sign me out, to give me out the door and sign out. When I went down to the restroom, of course, I was moving pretty fast. There's this big line of women there. And I just went up to the front of them and said, I'm going to throw up, get out of my way. And they did. And I went in there, you know, and got sick. And I remember thinking, I think if I don't pass these state boards, I'm just going to kill myself. After all that I have done to get to this point, and I just screwed up one night because I got drunk. It was just beyond me. I was so disgusted with myself. And I finished the test, and we went home, and 2 months later, I found out that I had passed the state boards with over 90th percentile. And thank God I was good in school. You know, it was in here, just got annihilated with drinking. And then I had to be faced with going to work as an RN, and I was terrified. I didn't feel adequate to do it. Even though I had gone to nursing school, I had no confidence. And I was still drinking. I didn't drink as much the night before I was going to go to work the next day. One of the things I was really frightened of is that I would hurt somebody by not being adequate. And I never did, but I was always worried about that. And um, So I worked the best I could. I was only working part-time the first year that I worked. I called in sick 16 times, and I guess that hospital enabled me and didn't even confront me with it. And I was lonely, so, you know, I wanted a relationship. And so I went to the singles thing, and it was pretty nice because there were a lot of single people there, and they had kind of a little program. It was called People Together. It was an offshoot of We Care, I think is what, anyway, for divorced people. And the first night that I went there, this guy was sitting close to the door, and he started talking to me, and I was not drinking, so I was pretty nervous. And he said, "Why don't you put your arms down? It's okay." I put my arms down, and then I come back up. And, I mean, so we ended up going out. And he was a recovering alcoholic. You know how we find each other, no matter what. Regardless if you're drinking or sober, we find each other. And we dated about 2 months. He was sober 3 years at that time. So he took me to meetings at Pathfinders on Cedar Street. We went to the Christmas Alcathon in Lemon Grove. We went to the War Memorial on New Year's Eve. And he had told me his story. And, you know, I just thought AA was really wonderful for people that needed it. And I asked him, "What if they call me? I don't know what to say." And he says, "Just say you pass. You're a visitor." Well, okay. So, you know, we went out one time, and he got mad at me and almost hit me because he had a background of being abused and abusing physically. And I never went out with him again. I would go to this single thing, and I wouldn't talk to him. And I just swore that that was never, ever going to happen to me again. And it hasn't. A lot of things I have to learn the hard way, I guess. When you grow up after you're a grown-up in years, you know, most people, you know, make all those mistakes when they're learning how to work when they're 18. And I was like 32, and it's, you know, people don't expect that of you. So I drank. I continued to drink, and I was divorced. I was raising three teenagers alone. My family was always behind us, though. I mean, my kids always knew if I was gone and they needed something, they could call my parents. And so I'm very grateful for that, for them. You know, there's a lot of things that I did not do for my children when I was drinking, and there were a lot of things that I did do that I shouldn't have, like leaving them home a lot. They were teenagers, and legally they could stay, but I wasn't home. I wasn't cooking them dinner, and I was hungover and not out of bed in the morning, and they would go to school without me getting out of bed. My daughter, who was probably 15, 16, 17, along in there, learned to forge my signature, and she would write the notes back for her brothers if they got sick. And they survived together, and, you know, I was a visitor, more or less. Told them what they needed to be doing, and they better be doing it. And I'm also very grateful that they never got in trouble. No policeman ever came to my door. We were living in a neighborhood where there were a lot of teenagers. And if somebody didn't want the kids in the house, they'd kick them out and they'd go down to somebody else's house. So they had kind of a teenage community there, which was really nice for them, and other families to hang out with as well. Toward the end of my drinking, I brought a couple boyfriends home when my kids were there. I'm proud to say that. I don't know what to say about that. It's just not okay. So I became desperate. I was sitting out on my day off on a lounge chair in the backyard with a glass of wine. Big glass of wine. And I was reading a book, and something in it really frightened me. And I started having a panic attack. And, you know, I got up and I went in the house, and I didn't know what to do. I never had a panic attack before. I didn't even know what was happening. I was breathing really fast, and I was scared. And I reached for a book because Bob, the guy that I had dated, gave me this book, and it was kind of a spiritual book. And I opened it up, and I saw his name. I wasn't even thinking. I really do believe that I was led by God all of this time. And I called him, and he worked Monday through Friday, but he was home on a Thursday. And I said, I'm really scared. He says, oh, do you want me to come over there, or do you want to come over here? And I said, I'm going to go over there. I don't want to scare my kids like I've never scared my kids. But I went over there, and he had been just jilted. And he was 6 years sober now, and he kept talking about himself. And I was such a people pleaser, I listened to him for probably almost a half an hour. And finally I said, you don't understand, I'm really scared. And he kind of just looked at me, and he said, are you an alcoholic, Carol? And nobody had ever asked me that before. I said, I think I am. And he said, well, do you want to stop drinking? And I said, yeah, I do. So he got out a piece of paper, and he wrote down what I needed to do if I wanted to get sober and stay sober. And somewhere in my stuff, I have that piece of paper. It's written on a notebook paper and pencil. And it said, you know, the things that we do. Don't drink one day at a time. Go to meetings. Buy a big book and a 12 and 12. Find a woman that you can get to help you to work the steps, and continue doing that, and you can get sober. So I stayed there that night, and the next day he directed me to go down to Pathfinders, and I didn't know it, but he called a couple of women to meet me there. He didn't want to go there because he probably didn't want people to think he was a 13-stepper, even though he was. Anyway, I went down there, and of course, you know, walking in, I'd been there before, so I knew kind of where it was. I walked into the door where the men go in and out instead of through the door into the meeting room. And of course, you know, if anybody was looking, they knew I was new. I had the wide deer in the freeway look, you know, and I sat down. And there was this guy named Beautiful Bill, and he limped over to me and he said, hi, my name is Beautiful Bill, and don't you ever forget it. And I went, whoa! You know, I didn't want anybody to notice that I was there. So, you know, that really calmed my nerves. And I sat there and listened. And then after I went outside after the meeting, and three women gathered around me. And I remember when I went to meetings there with Bob, I was so impressed because there was a woman there that was detoxing, and she was really visually shaking all over. And there were these people around her, and they put their hand on her shoulder, and they were consoling her. It always makes me cry when I think of it. And I thought, wow, you know, they're all about her, so she can get well. And kind of the same thing happened for me. I was out in front, and three women talked to me and told a little bit about themselves, and one of them said something that was probably important. She said, what are you doing tonight? And I said, I don't know. I mean, all I ever did was drink, whether I was home or somewhere else. And she said, why don't you pick me up and we'll go to a meeting? And I said, okay. And we started going to meeting every day. And she didn't have a car. She was sober when I got sober just under 3 years. And I thought that she'd lost her license, but she just didn't renew it when she got sober. So anyway, I would drive her around. And she'd take me on 12-step calls, and I'd tell her I don't have anything to say to these women. She had her name down at central office. And she said, that's okay. How many days are you sober, Carol? I'd say, three. And she'd say, you got three more days than that woman does, and she doesn't know how you did it. So you can tell her, because you're a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, that you have not drank in three whole days. And she says, that's probably more powerful than what I could tell her. I said, okay, I can do that. And then she'd tell me, you know, in the meeting, she'd say, I want you to go up and talk to any woman that has less time than you and tell her the same thing. I'm 10 days sober, and it's because I go to these meetings, and if I can do it, you can do it too. She had me doing 12-step work before I even knew what 12-step work was. And there was this gang of people that I hung around with. They kind of just scooped me up, and I was a part of that group. We went to meetings in the circuit around town. There weren't nearly as many meetings now as there were then. I got sober August 12, 1977. So I turned 30 years sober this last summer. And so there were considerably less meetings, fewer meetings. What it was a legal size piece of paper printed on both sides and folded in fourths. That was our what you give people if they wanted to find meetings. And I remember there was one guy with 20 years in that meeting. And I don't think I ever saw anybody with more than that, and maybe only one other person that had 20 years. And, of course, that's not true now at all. There's all kinds of people that have stayed and stayed sober and are 20-plus years and 30-plus years. And young people have started getting sober, and now there's people that will probably be 100 years by the time they die. They come in real young. And I was pretty unstable emotionally. Alcohol had pretty much done a number on me emotionally. And I believe today that I came in with active hepatitis B, not because I ever did drugs, but because of my sleeping all over town. You know, and I didn't know it. I just knew that I was having really a hard detox. It took me 3 months to feel okay, which was not usual. Years later, a doctor did a test on me, and he said, do you know that you had hepatitis B? And I said, no. He said, well, you've got a titer for hepatitis B. You don't even need to take the vaccine. I said, okay. And I thought back, the only time that I could think of it, you know, was back then. My eyes were a little yellow, and I'd have a real hard time working because I didn't feel well. When I was 42 days sober, my relationship passed, caught up with me, and I fell in love with somebody in AA. And he kind of just whisked me away, and my sponsor, and he got into a big fight in the courtyard from a meeting, you know, what's wrong with him, you know, blah, 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 and he's going blah, 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 back, and so I didn't ever fire her, but I just quit using her as a sponsor. I kind of just went with him. It's not recommended to do that, ladies. Please don't do that. It's not a good idea. This guy had 10 years sober, and he didn't work. He lived in his car, as did a lot of people down there with that Finders. It was a wonderful place. It still is. But I remember it as being, there was about every faction in life there going to those meetings. There were really dangerous people in there from Skid Row, or I don't know where they came from, but they had knives and looked really mad. And there were, I'm trying to not sit there. And I mean, they just never do. What were they just going to do? You know, and maybe I'd say something wrong. And then there were professional people there. And there were just everyday people, working people. And I learned a lot from those people. I learned a lot about what not to do as well as what to do. And I'm so glad that it was instilled in me very early. They used to say a lot of stuff from the podium there. See, that's why I'm not afraid of this. I learned how to talk in front of a podium there. They used to say, if you don't get a sponsor and you don't do the steps, you're going to drink. You know, and I'd go like that, kind of flinch. But I heard enough stuff to know what this program was about, and I came to my sponsor and said, I have to do the steps. And she said, okay. I was her first baby. I didn't know it at the time. And she had never taken anybody through the steps. And I found out years later that she called her sponsor up and said, she wants me to do the steps. Well, I do. And she said, Nancy, you've worked the steps. You know what to do. Just show her how. Oh, okay. You know, we were like two babies trying to do this program together. And she did get me, I started doing the steps right away, and I got to through the fifth step before I wandered off into the sunset with Mr. whoever he was. And one thing, I did learn some stuff from him. He sponsored a lot of men. He was, his career was AA, and he was very serious about it. And he taught me about a lot about AA, and I would never want to slight him from that, because I did learn a lot from him. Guys would come over and want to do a 10th step, and he'd ask them if it was okay if I stayed, and they'd say, I don't care, it's not that big deal. So I'd hear them interact while they were doing the 10th step, and I learned from that a little, quite a bit about how to sponsor people. And, you know, I didn't have any credit when I got sober, because when back then when you divorced, a woman didn't get the credit the man did, good or bad. So I had to build credit very slowly until I had credit. And it has always been really important for me to have good credit, because it was so hard for me to acquire it. And I eventually became financially stable enough that I bought this tiny little house in Lemon Grove with some help with my father and mother for the down payment. And people would say, how did you do that? And I'd say, save my money and bought a house. You know, you can do it too. And my finances, you know, got better and better as I went along. My depression got worse while I was sober. When I was 15 months sober, I ended up at CMH. And just out of reality. I'd follow this guy somewhere out in the wilderness somewhere, and I just got crazy. And I was there for a weekend, and my mom and dad came and got me, and they let me out because they said they would take me home. And I can remember being at home and looking outside and going, I feel pretty crazy. I always went to meetings, no matter what, except for the weekend I was in CMH. I would think, if I act not crazy, nobody will pick me up. So I would act like I was sane. And pretty soon I was, again, sane. And, you know, I've had relationships have gone through the years, have always been difficult for me. I would get into relationships, and it would last for a period of time. My first two relationships were very addictive relationships. In and out, in and out. Some people like to call it suitcase drill. And, you know, I at 6 years of sobriety, I realized that I really did not, I could not have a successful and healthy relationship with a man. And I asked God, I said, I can't do this. You're going to have to do it for me. Teach me how to have a healthy relationship with not only men, but with everybody. I felt more comfortable with women, so it wasn't quite as bad. But, and, you know, it. I worked on it. You know, I actually worked on trying to learn how to have a healthy relationship. And it didn't happen overnight. It didn't happen for a long time, really. But I grew as I went along, just as I grew in all areas of my life as a sober woman in Alcoholics Anonymous. Well, Alcoholics Anonymous is my life. It is a way of life that I live. I don't know what I would do without it. There are some people that get sober without AA, but it wouldn't have been me. It just wouldn't have been. I needed somebody to be hanging around and taking me along for a long, long time. I needed the people to bounce off of and for them to tell me the truth, because I was delusional part of the time. And so anyway, it's almost time for me to stop. I can tell you that I have grown spiritually over the years. I believe that my higher power loves me, has always been with me, even when I drank, and wants the best for me, and that all I need to do is seek God, and I get it every day without trying very hard. It's been a gift that I have gotten in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I always know he's there. I don't always talk to him, but I always know he's there. And I know that he's covering my back. I feel safe because I have God in my life. And I have been safe through the years. And relationship with my children got way better after I quit drinking. They grew up, got married, still married to the same spouse, had children. And because they could trust me now, I got to be there for three or four of the births that were at home. And they trust me with their children, and I'm so glad I didn't miss that. I'm so glad I didn't miss that. You know, before I got sober, I felt like I didn't even belong in my own family. It wasn't how they treated me. It was how I felt about myself. And I don't feel that way anymore. I'd like to say the end thing about relationships is I finally got to the place. I spent a lot of time alone in my sobriety without a relationship. Best thing I could have done. I finally, you know, talked to God and said, okay, if this is the way you want it for me, okay, let me see what my life can be if that's the way I'm going to live the rest of my life. And I have my family. I have my friends in AA. I have a program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I have God in my life. And it became just okay. And I became more willing not to take too much off of anybody anymore. It was kind of like, well, I don't need it, so, you know, hit the road, whatever. And I think that's important to get to that place because, you know, my self-esteem had grown to the point where I didn't have to take anything. And I guess I didn't really realize it, but I guess God had kind of said, okay, you've learned it. And my husband found me. He wasn't my husband, of course, at that time. And actually, we had dated 7 years earlier, and he was pretty new in the program at that time. And I told him that he wasn't really ready for a relationship. And he tells it different. He says that I said, "You're so screwed up, you can't be with anybody," which I never did. Maybe he was, I don't know. But 7 years later, he asked me out again, and it was right this time. We had become friends, and after being together for 2 years, we got married. We're married 5 years now, and we're very happy, and I thank God for showing me how to have a healthy relationship with a man. It's what I always wanted, but I was willing for it not to happen, if that was his will. And thank you for listening to me. I appreciate it.